Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This podcast bonus was originally recorded November 2019 at the home of Robert and Nena Thurman.
Talking today about the climate. This is the crisis, and we have to listen to Greta Thunberg. This podcast name is Listening to Greta Thunberg, trying to satisfy Mother Earth, for whom she is the oracle medium. And the context I want to give you: I got trained by Al Gore to do Climate Reality Project talks. And I have slides I received from him and his wonderful organization, Climate Reality Project. Problem is, I can't show the slides in a broadcast format. They are kind of restricted. So I'm going to have to verbally sort of run through a lecture. I want this lecture to be broadcast. I'm going to release this lecture as a special podcast without the usual poetry and podcast la-di-da. And it might be a bit long, so you should download it if you want it, and then go back to it, because it might surpass your time ability. You know, I might go on for 80, 90 minutes. And because there's a special thing on the 20th and 21st of November, in 2 weeks from now, which will be where everybody all over the world in the climate, connected with the Climate Reality Project, we'll be doing a climate reality alert, a wake-up call, you know, whatever you want to call Al Gore's magnificent Inconvenient Truth lecture with all his wonderful slides and his, you know, which he has elaborately researched and so forth, and transmitting the scientists, of course, which he is very much in touch with and who keep him up to date. And his fellow Nobel Prize winner was the IPCC, you know, which has put up all kinds of recent, and it's getting more and more emergency oriented. And now we have the thing of where the wealthy people in the Democratic Party are putting forth Biden, and Biden is meeting with frackers and oil industry people and taking PAC money from them. And so obviously, if he becomes the Democratic nominee, we will just have, of course, we will still vote for him because he will just do the usual idle thing that the petroleum industry does of not really still doing anything, but more or less pretending to, and at least not like Trump does, destroying the EPA and going against the automobile things. At least some people don't honestly realize they have to make the switch, whereas Trump is just complete crazed, you know, and the people backing him are just nuts, you know. And so, therefore, we would still vote for him, but that would be terrible. We would not have the Green New Deal. They'd be going on about how it would cost too much. And meanwhile, they don't think it costs too much when all the money is flowing into their hands. And more money than that wasted is being flowing into their hands. So, you know, my role in this, I'm neither a scientist nor am I really a great climate activist. I'm an ivory tower person who does Sanskrit and Buddhist studies and meditation and things like that. But on the other hand, I think philosophically and psychologically, I have a handle on the how to maybe switch around the motivation and help get people thinking about how they could sort of liven up things to move now on the Green New Deal and insist that any leader that anybody will select will be doing that. Like, you know, for example, Biden is exposed by the people who watch him on The Intercept, which is a, you know, more radical, you know, like Snowden kind of level journal, internet publication that has very good things, and it really does that. But that's not really connected to the general public. You don't get that on the websites that are tracking the candidates and so forth, you know. So that's not totally disqualifying him from any activist Tibet Democratic voter, as it should. He should be utterly disqualified long back. But you know, these things don't connect in that sort of in a more marginal circulation level publication. The fact that Biden, for example, last night, there were two wonderful things. One, on PBS, Jane Fonda was interviewed, who gets herself arrested in Washington, D.C., and moved there specifically for the purpose every Friday to honor Greta Thunberg, which I think is really great. And I feel guilty I'm not down there myself. And the other thing was that the Weather Channel did a full 1 hour, and they talked to various candidates, and they found a couple of Republicans, the former governor of South Carolina, who got busted having an affair with a beautiful Argentinian woman a few years ago. I forgot his name, but anyway. And then another guy named Joe Walsh, who, and they were saying, yes, climate change. And that's great, because I don't care, they're not mainstream. I think Weld also spoke, yeah, the other potential challenger of Trump on the Republican nomination. And they're saying climate change. And that's great. We welcome any Republicans who join in climate change. The Mitch McConnell horror, Lindsey Graham horror, Trump horror, other ones, and some in the House. And Democrats who are horrors too, because they're paid off by the petroleum industry. We don't want them. They are not qualified to lead the country and the world in the current crisis. Okay, so with that, so those were the two great things. And you can probably find the Weather Channel one maybe on YouTube, because it was a whole 1 hour. Kamala, Cora, Elizabeth, Bernie, and trying to think of any other candidate. Oh, Buttigieg. They were talking about climate, which was good that they all did talk about it. And Bernie and Elizabeth, I think, are the best about it. But they're all good about it, at least that they talk about it. And they pledge the Green New Deal, which we have to do. And then Jay Inslee sent an email this morning saying that, asking for signatures from potential voters to all the candidates, that they all must pledge to implement his plan, which is very fully written out, the Jay Inslee plan, extremely well written out for when he was running. And it's on the Jay Inslee website. Look it up. Okay, but now that, with that as a preface, I'm going to talk. And then also, why do I have a right to talk about this? Well, I am standing on Buddha's finger, because his hand, but particularly then the long central finger, is touching the earth at the time of his enlightenment, just before it, actually, as he's confronting the devil, calling the earth to witness that he has a right to be Buddha, because that means he becomes a being who's going to help every being. Therefore, naturally, he needs the earth to testify for him. He doesn't want idiots and demons to destroy the earth like they are now doing. And, you know, I will come in with my motive. So that gives me, that's where I'm standing. I'm on the right hand of the Buddha, metaphorically, as he calls the earth to witness. And I am listening to her current oracle, who is special. Al Gore is an oracle of the earth, too, in a way, but he's not of the oracular time. He's a great leader, and he's an eagle. My wife says he's the eagle. He's our real eagle, who should have been our president in 2000 and could again be, maybe. And anyway, he speaks for the earth. But the oracle who actually channels the voice of the earth is Greta Thunberg. Okay? So now beginning, Al's lecture begins showing the Earth itself from space, this fragile little ball, to give us all kind of location of the fragility of where we are. We are in this, we're spinning in the world. At the horizon, you know, at the equator, you're going around in the rotating axis of the Earth at 1,000 miles an hour, because you get around a 24,000-mile circumference in one day. So we're moving 1,000 miles an hour or less if we're at a higher latitude. And then that ball itself is going 66,000 miles an hour around orbit around the sun. And then the sun is moving 100 and some many thousand miles per hour or per second within the galaxy. You know, they have some calculation, I forget the numbers, but it's shocking. So we're in this very fragile thing, and the air is the fragile envelope that protects us, and the ozone layer from the excessive heat of the sun's rays, which would make us like Mars, unsupportable, unable to support life if we keep ruining it. You know, and we have a, and then Al shows right away, he shows the Earth, you know, the Earth, the sun waves come in, you know, and he starts out with a wonderful statement. We are now spewing 110 million tons of man-made global warming pollution into the thin shell of our atmosphere every 24 hours, as if it were an open sewer, he adds, because he's very passionate nowadays, Al Gore. Wonderful. But isn't that awful? 110 million tons. Because that's important, because you just see smoke coming out of smokestacks, and you think, oh, gee, it was just some smoke. 110 million tons of that carbon and methane and other such things, but especially carbon, into this delicate envelope within which our lives are encased and without which our lives would not happen. We'd die from this coarse body. We would still be there. We wouldn't go into nothing because nothing's not here. We would be continuing in some terrible gaseous form, perhaps, who knows, or heading for a worse planet, who knows. But, or living as some really weird creature in a completely, you know, like non-oxygen, you know, oriented atmosphere. So 110 million tons of pollutants every 24 hours. Got that? You can get down to how much in a minute. So this has to stop. Now, the other thing is, that can all stop today. We could stop that today, or in a few months, actually, easily. Did they all act, oh, it's impossible? No, we could stop it in a few months, most of it, 75% of it. How? Just turn off every single coal-fired power plant in the world right away and minimize the petroleum ones. Let the gas ones go a few more months, maybe, and then energetically put all the money that we can take it from the defense budget, because it's our international enemy, is the climate distortion, the crisis, the cloud of pollutants we put there. That's our enemy. No nation, no other nation is our enemy. Every other nation shares that enemy with us. It's like in my granddaughter's, you know, Stranger Things. It's like the blob that's trying to eat them all, or eat the town, or eat all the people. And it's everybody's enemy, every nation's enemy. The Russians, Putin's real enemy is that, not us, not Ukraine. That's his real enemy. That will destroy his Kremlin and everything. And his oil business, which he's making Russia into wrongly. Okay, now, it doesn't matter how many billions of money you have, you cannot buy another atmosphere. It's not, there's no one selling one. Okay? So, it could all be done very quickly. Like, if you took $50 billion, like one aircraft carrier group just decide we could handle another decade or two without another aircraft carrier group, let's say. Just bag one aircraft carrier group or a few F-35s and take some billions. And the people who make those things, you could hire them to do some of these other things. And you take them and you give $10 million apiece per coal-fired power plant to every single one in China and India and Russia and Europe. You just go pay whoever owns it $10 million to turn it off, and to maybe 20. Say 20. It's plenty of money in those carrier groups. That is not the carrier cannot fix the atmosphere. But if you pay them all to turn off all those coal power, they will turn them off, and then the workers. Some of the money can go to get the workers trained to do something else, build some air wind towers and tunnels and things quickly. All the coal miners get out there, scrub themselves off, and get up there and start being taught to manufacture, create special plants, use the building of the plants if it's usable, or put up another building, and immediately create some alternative energy source, renewable source. We couldn't do that. And in the meantime, some cleaner gas or something temporarily could burn to keep the cities from getting too dark, or turn the hospitals on, whatever, generators, you know, like, we're not going to put people in desperate situations, but immediately change all that power production. And then immediately pay all the farmers worldwide to plant cover crops, not to put this polluting, terrible nitrogen, weird, you know, like surface plowing, crazy monocultures, and pay for that. And they treat it like a crisis. And as Greta says, act like our house is burning, because it is. Okay? So that's the beginning of the lecture. So then we go next. He shows, you know, how the CO concentration traps the heat that comes in. And he shows the sources, industrial processes. Coal plants are among the worst. Then the way fertilizer is made out of petroleum. Of course, oil production itself, like even fracking, tremendous methane release comes from that. Transportation, then moving to the electric cars. You know, we could have 10 Tesla factories built. 20. Let GM build one. They're doing some stupid thing of trying to crush Tesla so they can slowly do it, as if they had plenty of decades to do it. They don't. They all just immediately make all great electric cars. They already do, and they just make that their major thing. And they just don't have the gas ones to be sold anymore. They don't put the metal into that form. Combustion engine, they say goodbye. Don't produce any new ones. There are plenty of old ones. They can repair them for a while. Coal mining is really horrible. It's all right here. And forest fires and things, of course, which you can't stop right away. That takes time. Then, but the largest is the burning of fossil fuels, the largest source of global warming. They show it here. It's escalating. It's gone huge from 2000, by the way. It's gone really enormous from 2000. So this, the robbery by the Supreme Court and by other criminal institutions of the election from Al Gore, the climate president, in the year 2000, funded by the oil industry, and it put in the oil industry people who then wasted trillions of dollars attacking Iraq criminally, killing hundreds of thousands of people, and ruining a lot of things, and the economy too. Since that time, till 2020, has been a huge, it almost doubled the amount of pollution in there. So they really have become criminal. They should be treated as climate criminals, as the young people call them, correctly. So CO2 is being released into the atmosphere right now faster than any time in at least the last 66 million years. I love that one. And then he has a lot of graphs, which I can't show you, but that's never mind. They're not that graphic. And then there's a series of slides that are very graphic, but you can know them from news reports, like 115 degrees June 28th in Paris, in Prayagraj, India on June 15th, 123 degrees. These are not human things. 103 degrees in Hokkaido, Japan, that's the northern island of Japan. Melbourne, Australia, 121 degrees. 224 locations around the world set all-time heat records in 2018. There's a map of the globe and all kind of red dots at 100-degree-plus temperatures. And some of the really worst ones, they have, it doesn't go down under the human body temperature, 98.6, at night. And then that's lethal to older people and some children. And it's incredibly desiccating of the soil, and it's terrible. 90 people died in Quebec during the July 2018 heat wave. So there's a whole bunch of things. This is, in other words, there's a series of slides that emphasize globally what's going on, not just what happened in the Catskills or even the dreadful things in California that are going on now, right now, as I speak, in the fall. But 124 degrees in Ouargla, Algeria, on July 5th. Just terrible. So they go on with that. North Pole, 50 degrees hotter than normal, or 28 degrees centigrade, on February 25th, 2018. So that means in the winter, still winter of 2018, it was 50 degrees Fahrenheit, 28 degrees centigrade, hotter than normal. You see what's the phone. And it's okay, I let the phone go. I'm going to go through the phone because you can hear me anyway. This is not fancy. We're doing this, and we're doing this like this. And then, now, they show beautifully now, Al has some wonderful, wonderful pictures of the planet with showing the jet stream, how it happens, and also explaining this thing that puzzled many of us here in North America last year when we had some tremendous cold waves. Because although that didn't stop 2018 from being the hottest year in history, but nevertheless, we had some tremendous cold waves, but that's because it was really hot up in, relatively speaking, up in the Arctic, because the polar ice has all melted up there. And therefore, you know, it splits the polar vortex, a sort of wind umbrella that's up over the air umbrella that's up over there in the atmosphere. And it splits it in two, bringing bitter cold to parts of North America and Europe and record warmth to the Arctic. And that's why we then had incredible cold waves down here, because that was the Arctic cold being pushed down here, but it didn't help us, had us burning more heating oil, if anything, if we have our house heated like that. And but it didn't cool the planet, really, because there's such heat up at the North Pole. And then there's these beautiful pictures of the jet stream and how it normally moves, and then how it has come to neurotically move, with this polar vortex split and the tremendous cold wave that went all the way down all through Canada and Alaska and Greenland and so forth, but yet it was really hot up above. So then there are all kinds of pictures of Chicago looking completely like the Arctic itself. And but that's temporary, right? Because that's in a temperate zone. And, the Arctic sea ice is way more, there's a graph here, it's way less than it has been over the last 1,500 years since the last ice age. I mean, post-ice age, you know. North Pole has now experienced midwinter heat waves 3 years in a row, 16, 17, and 18, he states correctly. He shows a picture of it with colors. And then shows you the melting of Greenland. The heat wave last summer in Paris and Europe, unprecedented, hundreds of degrees, over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. It moved to Greenland and it accelerated the melting of Greenland, you know, which will raise our water levels enormously, you know, because it accelerated this thing. You know, the Greenland is reached what was predicted to be a 50-year worst-case analysis for Greenland in 2009. That is to say, 2059 was surpassed already in 2014, and probably, you know, even more surpassed, doubled maybe by now, even in 2019. So it's really serious, that one, you know. And then there's a lot of stuff showing Greenland. And then now we get to the rising water levels. Top 10 cities at risk from sea level rise: Calcutta, Mumbai, Dhaka, Guangzhou in China, Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam, Shanghai, Bangkok, Rangoon, Miami, and Haiphong. Those cities are all completely, those are population at risk. And by assets at risk, you have Miami, New York, you throw in New York and Miami in there, Tokyo, Tianjin, Hong Kong, and Bangkok also get thrown in there when you get the number of assets, you know. You know, the value of real estate and so on. Population, it's only Miami in America, but by assets, it's several of our cities. And then tremendous amount of flood. By the way, this is an important fact. 93% of the heat, of the extra heat in the atmosphere trapped by man-made global warming pollution goes into the ocean. So the raising of the heat in the ocean is a very, very dire thing. And there's a lot of information about that that we can inform you with. I'm informing you here, looking at these slides. And that is really terrible. And half of the increase, total increase over the normal, has been just in the last 20 years in the oceans. And this is killing coral reefs. But this, you know, then some people might think, oh, just some coral reefs, whatever. No, it's killing all fish populations. Fish is a major source of protein for billions of people on the planet, and they're being killed off by this heat rise. They're ruining, they're getting ruined. Salmon pass out before they even go up to spawn because of the heat of the upper ocean, of the ocean off of British Columbia and so on, for example, you know. So that's it's really serious, the ocean. Heat wave days in the ocean, huge graph spikes at 2019, 2020, unbelievable. Then, of course, this relates, the ocean high temperature relates to all these tremendous bunch of hurricanes. And Hurricane Harvey, he mentions, in showing Houston, Texas, a tremendous flood they had there. And then her Typhoon Haiyan that smacked the Philippines and just killed many people. It shows many trash cities in the Philippines. It shows the Pope running over there, trying to like pray for the Philippines. Some unbelievable cloud pictures of huge downpours that you couldn't even believe. They look like alien invasions. Global record-breaking precipitation anomalies. So you see, this could be, and that's the other thing you don't understand is that we don't understand is that basic condition of drought is punctuated by flooding rainfalls. And once the soil is all loosened by drought and plants have died and fires have come, then flooding deluges like super concentrated rainfalls create terrible mudslides and disastrous things, you know, like happened in Santa Barbara and so on. And the Guangxi, you know, Guilin, China, showing all these unbelievable floods. Mumbai, Kerala in India, they killed a lot of people, damaged. And each flood cost billions to fix, you know. When you see this and you see the purple like Gore, I mean, not Gore, Biden having the nerve in the debate to say, oh, your climate, your Green New Deal will cost $30 trillion, so that's too much money. You know? Meanwhile, every one of these disasters costs hundreds of billions. So the 10 years will be much more in disasters repairing. So that is minor $30 trillion, actually, compared to the amount of when the whole land is wrecked. And you can't count the trillions. You know, and it's food, and it's housing, and it's roads, and it's just incredible to say that it's just too much, like he's saving money or something. It's ridiculous. Furthermore, about jobs, they always pretend that jobs depend on the oil industry. There's very few jobs in the oil and coal and so forth industries compared to the millions of jobs that will be there by switching over dramatically and in an emergency mode to renewables. There'd be millions of jobs. And in places where that's started to happen, like the state of Minnesota and a few places, millions of jobs have emerged. The biggest job increases are in like installing windmills, repairing them, manufacturing them. It's a huge bunch of jobs, much more. And then re-insulating houses and weatherizing them to save energy in the final product. You can't do that with robots and with factories. Individuals have to go to the houses and do it. So it's personal jobs that can't be replaced by robots. And just showing more floods here now. I'm skipping through. 13 people killed in Sao Paulo by flood. Worldwide extreme weather catastrophes. Again, the graph is going way up. Economic losses from extreme weather totaled $653 billion of immediate overt costs over the past 2 years alone. The same extra heat that evaporates more water from the ocean, causing bigger downpours and floods, pulls moisture even more quickly from the soil, causing longer and deeper droughts. That's what I was saying. Then it gets into that. They show unbelievable drought in India again, especially Chennai, where a whole city ran out of water. Madras, that is Chennai, that's its Indian name. Eastern Australia, the worst drought in living memory. Western Cape, South Africa, they ran out of water. One of the big cities there, I think, was it Cape Town or Cape Town, I think. Yeah, Cape Town, early 2019. The whole city almost ran out of water. Big city in South America. 97% of Iran. We don't have to sick Secretary Pompeo on Iran or John Bolton. 97% of Iran experienced severe drought in 2018. And I don't know about 19, it only has a slide for 18, but severe. So Iran is suffering badly because of bad vibes, you know. And hotter years have more fires. Toledo, Spain, tremendous fires and droughts. Alberta, Canada, South Korea, Colorado. Fire season U.S. West was now 105 days longer than it was in 1970, and I think that number will be more now if you add in what's happening in California. November 8 to 18, Paradise, California, killed 86 people, burned 14,000 homes and businesses. But everyone has seen that. In the weather station movie, Bernie was walking around in that town. Good old Bernie. Mendocino Complex fire, the largest ever recorded in California, over half the size of Rhode Island, Lakeport, California, July 31st to 18. Three most expensive wildfires in world history have happened in the last 2 years, all three in California. And it isn't because they didn't rake the forest like Donald Trump lies and says. Sweden has terrible wildfires. 8 above the Arctic Circle, which is an especially dangerous place for them to happen. England, it looks like a moonscape there. Chile, Victoria, Australia, Central Russia, Moscow, Russia. 55,000 people died of air pollution in Russia in the summer. And well, that was earlier. That was a few years earlier. 4 months later, this was in 2010, world food prices reached record highs after Russia halted grain exports and Ukraine restricted them after the record drought and fires of that year. Food, worldwide food, you know, gets so disrupted. Tunisia, drought. The whole Arab Spring had to do with terrible drought all over the Middle East. 60% the 2006 to 2010 drought, which started the Syrian war, or genocide, actually, really, of themselves, their own genocide of each other, mainly, although other people helped, by ISIS and so on. But the 2006 and 2010 drought turned 60% of Syria's fertile land into desert and drove 1.5 million people into Syria's already crowded cities, which is why the crisis arose there then, because the stupid Assad government started shooting them instead of providing them with whatever they could find or appealing to the rest of the world to deal with the catastrophe. So they started shooting them, and then that started the war, you know. So the U.S. Department of Defense, in its 2014 Climate Change Adaptation Roadmap, before the Inhofe and the Petroleum and the Koch brothers administration, which is the Trump administration, Trump-Pence administration, managed to shut them down. The Department of Defense said, climate change will likely lead to food and water shortages, pandemic disease, disputes over refugees and resources, and destruction by natural disasters in regions across the globe, because our military was making it our major foreign danger, was climate, not any other country. When they were allowed to be honestly speak, you know, then you had the whole terrible European refugee thing that has brought back Nazism in Europe, more or less, all the people flooding there because of the starvation in the Middle East. The world could see the Lancet, a famous medical journal from England. They stated the world could see up to 1 billion climate migrants within a decade or two. Who's going to handle that, you know? Then the whole thing coming from Central America, there's been a terrible drought in Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador, huge one, it's all brown on the map. And that's what's brought those people up north in such droves. And then Trump cut off money to try to help them stay home. And gangsters took over when things get chaotic, they take over and government becomes weak. And so that's also climate. And the idiots here are just intensifying, no trying to stop the vehicles from being properly changed and destroying and pumping more oil and gas and even shouting about the coal. You can see this purple thing on the map. that I can show you that shows Honduras, El Salvador, parts of Nicaragua, and Guatemala completely droughted out. It's called the Central American Dry Corridor. It goes all the way down to parts of Costa Rica, even, actually. It's just terrible. Has to do with it. And that has to do with the distorted, not only El Nino, but the distorted also jet stream, which pushes all the rain coming off the Pacific too far north, and it's also what creates the drought in California. Honduras was ranked number one of all 184 countries on the Global Climate Risk Index, and Nicaragua was ranked number four. So in case you're wondering where the poor people desperately trying to come north are coming from, that's what they're coming from. A terrible drought where they have no food, primarily. Then, of course, then there's all gangsters and other kind of horrible things that jump out when things become chaotic. And it has pictures, aerial pictures of the terrible situation in El Salvador. The main reason people are moving is because they don't have anything to eat. We are seeing tremendous climate instability that is radically changing food security in the region. This is from Robert Albro, Center for Latin American Latino Studies at American University in Washington, D.C. Then there's a series of wonderful slides showing how climate change affects world food supply. And then under the different headings, which I'll just read to you, there's the problem of nutrition, floods, drought, disease of plants, that is, heat, pests, fires, water availability, and toxins. And then under each of those, is because they show a big circle saying food, and then they show these other 9 different elements, and then each one of those has a few graphic illustrations to make it really get in your mind, which I'll just have to tell you about. But I will skip over because I don't want to go on to forever, but I am going to go over time on the normal. And then under heat, it has something. Under pests, it goes on like that. And then there's a bunch of slides there, and I actually already have less. Then how does extreme weather affect health? And then he has again health. Then he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then 8 things around that. And what they are: extreme weather events, infectious disease, water, mental health, allergens, heat stress, air pollution, and food. So the health of the living beings, of humans. Of course, none of this is mentioning the extinction of many animal species, which is terrible, that's going on. Very much upsets Greta, and should do so, because it's all part of a delicate ecological web, or the other animals. We need them. They perform functions. Like, if you don't have birds, then you have too many insects. If you don't have this kind of insect, you have too many of that kind of insect. And you know what I mean? It's a balance. And it's going to be very destructive. And you end up with the most hardy ones often are the pests, So anyway, health has all of those things. And under that, heat stress is a terrible one. And who is most vulnerable to heat? Poor and the homeless, the elderly, infants and children, those with pre-existing medical conditions, particularly cardiac and respiratory conditions, the mentally ill, and agricultural workers and those with outside jobs. So these kind of people will actually die. And apparently, I didn't know that, but if it doesn't go below 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, which is the normal heat of the human body, at night, and there isn't major air conditioning and so forth in some poorer places, then people do start dying. Because the body has to get back under its normal temperature, at least some of the day, even when it goes up in the hundreds during the daytime of the day. That's really, we're very fragile, really, you have to understand, Extreme heat events cause more deaths annually in the U.S. than all other extreme weather events combined. See, well, the beauty of ALTS and the Climate Reality Project's thing is they show all these things together, which normally we don't put together. So we think, this and that is a different problem. But they're totally interconnected. Everything is totally interconnected. Then allergens, I can testify to them becoming really a pain. There'll be grains of pollen per cubic meter. There's some kind of measure here that 8,455. And by 2040, according to this prediction, there'll be 20, a researched prediction, and it gives the source, grains of pollen per cubic meter is 21,735. So that's multiplied almost three times the amount of allergies, and I suffer from them, and you just can't take enough, you know, like Claritin, you know, showing Durham, North Carolina with horrible mist in Germany, showing, you know, clouds of allergens in the sky and air pollution, deaths attributable to ambient air pollution. And it has a color thing, and it says death per year, and it has different colors, 0 to 5,000, then 5 to 20,000, then 20 to 50,000, then 50 to 150, and then over 150. And over 150 is China and India and some parts of maybe looks like, that's it, really. China and India are over 100. They're the only ones over 150. Russia is between 50 and 150, most of Russia and parts of Europe. And America is between 20 and 50. And Brazil is between 20 and 50. And Alaska is between 20 and 50. Why? I don't know why Alaska. Maybe it's melting methane, or maybe the big, terrible forest fires have been going on in Alaska. I don't know. And between 5 and 20, Canada. You know, Canada's between 0 and 5,000. So they're good, actually. And parts of Africa are like that. And the Scandinavia is between 0 and 5,000. Australia is between 0 and 5,000. So though they're better. Worldwide air pollution kills 9 million people every year. Okay? More than half of the people in the U.S. live in counties that don't meet EPA air quality standards. Pollution exposure during pregnancy has been linked to high blood pressure in children. The percentage of African-American children suffering from asthma is nearly twice that of white children, and their death rate is 10 times higher. And this has to do with climate justice and injustice. The fact that poor people, people of color, that all kinds of dumps and incinerators and polluting industries are placed near the residential areas of people of color all over the country. And that has to do with that. And it's really bad news. And it's part of the Green New Deal is fixing that, and it's very important that they do it. And the cost of mortality from outdoor air pollution, I have no idea how that's calculated, but boy, it's high. And it's actually, we're not that bad in compared to China, Russia, India, Germany, Korea, Iran, it's going down, Japan, UAE, Saudi Arabia, then us, then below us, other countries. And they show pictures of Bangkok. It really looks, it's like looking through a screen. A baby born in Warsaw today, Poland is bad, will inhale the equivalent of 1,000 cigarettes in the first year of his or her life from smog and other air pollutants. Unbelievable. A baby born in Warsaw today. New Delhi, India. One minister, Indian minister last summer said New Delhi was a gas chamber. He actually said. And China, too. China's really bad. The China miracle, give me a break. Then infectious disease, they go on. And I know that my friend Larry Brilliant, who helped eradicate smallpox in India and worldwide, is very worried about that, that these mosquitoes and borne things and all kinds of other things are coming, you know, because all these tropical things are moving north, and also waterborne, and they list cholera, dysentery, hepatitis A, typhoid fever, E. coli, Cryptosporidium and Campylobacter, whatever that is, terrible stuff coming. More than two-thirds of waterborne diseases outbreaks in the U.S. have been preceded by extreme precipitation events. That's those terrible floods that occur from global warming, you know. And they list a bunch of the flesh-eating bacteria coming, terrible, killing also sea animals, sea mammals very badly. We're losing 50% of all land-based species in this century. That's the risk. Cost of carbon. And yeah, this is a good one. I'll give you a list. Political instability. That's what we have. Floods and mudslides. Wildfires. Drought. Storm damage. Ocean acidification. Infrastructure loss. Climate refugees. Species extinction. Melting glaciers. Famine. Water scarcity. Ecosystem loss. Our way of life, infectious diseases, sea level rise. These are all the number one threat to the global economy. It's appalling, actually. Totally. And the Mark Carney, governor of Bank of England, October 2014, quote, "The vast majority of carbon reserves are unburnable, and those climate criminals in the oil companies, except Shell and to some extent BP, they're still, all they do is spend their money finding more of them, more unburned reserves, because it raises the stock price for the executives. It's just for money. And they're already billionaires. It's just so completely crazy." In July 2019, BP's head of strategy admitted that some of its unextracted resources won't see the light of day. And yet, global energy subsidies are $5.2 trillion by governments, two oil companies. We get that. Not only do they sell us this stuff, not only do they wreck the environment, but we pay out of taxes, and we and all other countries in the world, $5.2 trillion. And actually, this comes up into the hundreds of trillions when the World Bank calculates. This is probably OECD calculation. It's listed here. The World Bank calculates the cost also of the damage that is done, and it comes up into the hundreds of trillions. Of thing, but they're $5 trillion, and so then that's what we give as subsidies, and then that Biden dares to say, oh, $30 trillion or $10 trillion or any number of trillion to spend on Green New Deal is too much money, and we're giving them $5 trillion to produce more of this unburnable stuff. Please, what craziness is this? It's only because people don't know. They're not informed because these other people have the money to pay all these fake commercials and fake politicians and fake information that they, you know, Fox News and propaganda, they give them. That's why everybody is not rebelling in the street. Everybody, farmers in Iowa, not just like kids and not just like people in cities, red state people who are being flooded and typhooned and tornadoed and hurricaned. They'd all be freaking out if they had the information. And that's why it's so urgent to get the information to them. So that's why I'm talking now. You know, I want to talk more. Other places I will. And meanwhile, they give only, there's like $143 billion go to renewables, a little effort by the Obama and so forth. But not right now. They're not doing anything now to renewables. Maybe a little is still left in the States and so forth. In the U.S. alone, we pay $649 billion to the climate criminals out of our taxes. No wonder the politicians are ready to vote for them and act like Green New Deal is crazy. Because out of that $649 billion that we subsidize the climate criminals in the oil industry and Koch brother type of people, but lots of them, not just Koch brother, and we subsidize them. And then out of that, they pay off the politicians a million or two here. They give them jobs the minute they lose, they get voted out of office. They pay for their campaigns. They pay PAC money for their ads and things. And they have plenty of it because we pay our taxes for them to subvert our democracy. How about that? Does that make sense to you? Anybody? You know, you could be a John Birch Society member. Would that make sense to you? That you're like forests where you like to go and use and do target practice there and shoot some targets is all going to be burned. And you're paying taxes for a government to pay these people to create a climate that will burn your forest where you like to have target practice. Does that make sense to you? That you should pay them to wreck your environment? I don't think so. You know, we can talk about your guns later. So, cuckoo. It's the, you know what it is, actually, is, you know, we have this wonderful open society where we get to see, everybody gets to see everybody else's underwear, you know, and everything. And so some of these really nasty people get some money and then they use that openness to confuse and delude everybody. Do you follow me? Instead of feeling that there's a kind of ethic of honesty in the, within the openness to show their colors, you know. So anyway, that's it. So that's the catastrophe. That's not it, but that's the catastrophe. Now in the Al's wonderful, wonderful thing, he says, there's one slide here, hundreds of slides in, It says, so must we change? And it says, yes. And that's a good one. Can we change too? And the answer is a resounding yes, although he throws in a slide, or I picked one, of Easter Island, you know, which became a desolate, barren place with just all a bunch of big heads standing there. You know how they look like, those funny big heads in Easter Island, where they cut all the trees down to make, they carve these heads and roll them around. And then they went extinct as a society on Easter Island. So these big heads are like the climate criminals' heads, because each one of them has billions of dollars. And then what are they going to do with the billions of dollars? Put it under the head there. They can't do anything with it. Put it in their coffin. What? It's ridiculous. We have the solutions at hand, says Al. And green energy progress. Then he shows how in 2000 there was a projection that worldwide wind capacity would reach 30 gigawatt by 2010. But by 2018, that goal was exceeded by a factor of 20 times. So that means 20 times 30, that's 600 gigawatts instead had been made by 2018. Well, that's a little later than 2010. But anyway, that just shows how fast it can change if we really put the money into it. And it shows the graph goes like that, exponential. And globally, wind could supply worldwide electricity's consumption 40 times over. And all it needs is a lot of wind towers instead of more coal-fired power plants or even petroleum-fired power plants or even gas-fired power plants. It means a lot of wind towers and a lot of barren places where there's nobody else. And they have now slow blades that go very slowly so they don't kill birds. They don't have to go whoosh, whoosh, whoosh like super fast. They're slow because they're so big. And they can be put in barren places where they won't hurt anybody. And then, however, to deliver it, it's like the big, huge solar panel farms in the deserts. We need to invest the money in a huge electricity backbone that will go from those desolate places and deserts and things to the cities, which we could deliver at that. We could make a really modern backbone. DC, I think, is there's less waste in DC than AC. I forget. But anyway, we could do that. And that would not be the cost of what that cost. Equivalent of 100 coal-fired power plants, probably less, to make such a backbone, running from the Mojave Desert to New York City, to Miami, Miami will be maybe underwater anyway, or to New Orleans, or Houston, okay? It could be done really fast if you put major emergency money into it. Just get out there, and big jobs, GE, make the backbone, and Koch Brothers, start investing and get out of your wasted refineries, get out of your stranded assets, and get out of your stupid tar sands and weird polluting stuff in all over the place and pipelines, and get out there and make a backbone line. You still have billions in cash. You still have huge industrial capacity. Build something that's useful, not this horrible stuff that's killing everyone, including yourself. Look at these great wind farms in Germany and so forth. You know, the electricity, when Germany switched all its subsidies to renewables after Fukushima under the wonderful Angela Merkel, within a couple of years, electricity was so cheap and plentiful, distributedly generated electricity was so cheap and plentiful that the utilities stock price was tanking. And then somebody in the German government woke up and realized that they had all the pension funds invested in the utilities. So they put a halt on it. And then to get revenge, the utilities bought a lot of coal. So that, you know, it wasn't a wash, but it wasn't as great an advantage for the Green New Deal in Germany as it should have been. Because they stupidly didn't move the stock somewhere else for the pensions, for crying out loud. Pension is not going to do anybody any good if they're living in a slag heap. Scotland, in the first half of 2019, Scotland produced enough wind energy to power all of its households almost twice over. And the wind is always blowing up there in Scotland. Yes, indeed. The United Kingdom generated more than three times as much energy from wind as from coal in 2018. So he's just showing, in other words, how cheap it is. And I know that I was in India at an energy conference, like energy type energy transition conference in Mumbai, and there everyone was agreeing that, and the figures were there, it was like half the price of a gigawatt of electricity from renewables, either solar or wind, as it is from was from coal or oil. I think it was a quarter of the price for coal and a half the price for oil. But there's a big coal lobby in a coal industry there, and the government has a coal agency. And so you have to pay them off. We have to pay them. We created our pollution more than they. They're trying to catch up industrially. So we have to pay them to turn off the coal and to rehire the coal people and to get them happily employed and well-fed, et cetera, subsidized, and stop having droughts and killing themselves. Then the solar energy progress. Solar in 2002, solar energy market would grow 1 gigawatt per year by 2010. That was predicted, and the reality by 2018 was exceeded by 109 times. That is to say, it was growing 109 gigawatts per year, not just 1 gigawatt per year. Since 2004 projection, then so world solar, you know, crystalline silicon solar molecule, the cost has gone way down to 0.25 cents, to 0.25 cents a watt, from where it was $79 a watt in 1978. Now it's 25 cents a watt of silicon solar cell. Okay, then in June, Nevada's Energy signed an agreement to purchase solar electricity at 2.4 cents per kilowatt hour, the lowest price paid so far for any electricity in the United States. And then Germany went and blah, 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 this, all of this stuff like that. So basically, a new electrical capacity in India, China, it's going like that. And there's a wonderful slide he has of the Kentucky Coal Mining Museum, which has solar panels on its roof in West Virginia. And by the way, Hillary Clinton had a $60 billion plan detail, like a Green New Deal type of plan, detail, had she been elected, to save the stranded communities in West Virginia, who, of course, all voted for the idiot, the clown, and the crazy clown, because they were deluded by propaganda. But she had a plan to build community centers, healthcare, new jobs, et cetera, new industries for them, $60 billion to invest. Instead of that, what the clown has done with his friends in the coal industry is shut down coal mines, don't pay them their final wages, and just completely just boot them out because coal was going anyway. She's not the one. Liberals are not the one turning off the coal. The market turned it off with the cheap gas and everything. It wasn't any Democratic plot. And those guys just simply won't take care of you because they're a bunch of con men and artists and robbers. She had a plan for you. She's a Wellesley girl. She's not an evil devil. It's just propaganda. But anyway, never mind. It's too late for her to save you. But Green New Deal will be fine. So that's a good one. And huge farms in Chile. In Chile. You know, it's like I feel a chill in my feet and then I suddenly sneeze. It's interesting. Never mind, I'm an old man. Don't turn it off. You can edit that out. There's nothing there. It's just my feet. It's from not sitting properly cross-legged. But never mind. Getting toward the end now. So, Chilean coal solar market is huge. And they're all going that way. Enough solar energy, this is a famous slide, I've seen it many times. Enough solar energy reaches the earth, it's nice they show the sun and the rays, every hour to fill all the world's energy needs for a full year. So there's the untapped thing. But the thing is that once you do it, you're not paying all the time, you know, to some oil company. See, that's why they've been blocking it for decades. For 40, 50 years, they have blocked it. They're criminals. They're criminally they have blocked what is the major danger to the economy and the people of the United States and the world. They have blocked anything being done about it. That is criminal. That is totally unpatriotic and totally criminal. So the young kids calling them climate criminals are not being radical or crazy. They're being precise. By 2030, India plans to have 500 gigawatts of renewable electricity capacity in place. That's probably not as fast as we need by 2030, but probably it's a good direction anyway. The reason they can't do it faster is that in the Paris Accord, the heavily industrialized countries like us and Europe promised to pay off those poorer countries that didn't do as much polluting before, but now are having industrial takeoff and now are doing, I mean, we're using coal and other things, now are doing it. We promise to pay them to compensate for the fact that they are, their poor people are suffering worse from our polluting in the past, even though they're adding to it. So therefore, the excuse that you hear from the oil company-backed people, why should we do anything about them in the United States because they're not going to do anything in those countries, that's a fake argument, because what we would do to save ourselves from more catastrophes that are more costly would be take some of the money that we're wasting on subsidizing those idiots, the oil industry people, who are already sitting fat and happy with huge billion-dollar bank accounts and in their flooded cities. But anyway, they are. And they're all planning to go to Mars or New Zealand or something when it gets really bad, and or Wyoming, some high mountain. And instead of that, we should be paying India to switch more fast. So not by 2030 will they have 500 gigawatts, but by 2025. And no more coal plants. They could stop having coal plants this year. In 2020, there would be no more coal plants. If we would go pay, I don't know how many there are. I should know that. Maybe in another lecture I will tell you. I'll try to find out. But if there's 300 coal-fired power plants, we allocate $5-10 million apiece, and that's like $3 billion or less. I'm not math quickly in my head, whatever it is. And that's all it would cost. And there'd be no more coal coming out of that sky over India. And we do the same in China, another $3 or $4 billion. And then there's no more coal dust coming out of there. And then we need to pay money for the Mongolian coal miners, Chinese coal miners, Indian coal miners, who would be happy, I'm sure, to have a clean air job rather than going down under the earth there and getting all grimy and having mines blow up and rocks fall on their heads. You know, they'd be happy to work doing something cleaner, I have no doubt. They don't love going under earth in the coal. Here it is, July 2018, India received bids for solar power at 2.44 rupees. That's a few cents. A rupee is 60 rupees to the dollar. This is 24% lower than the average cost for coal-fired electricity in India. I think it's higher. It's like half the price, not a quarter of the price. Or a quarter of the price, that's right, quarter price. So then they're showing all how fast it can go in India. New Delhi Center for Policy Research, a guy called Navroz Dubash, he said you'd have to be quite courageous to invest in coal in India at this point. People are pulling out of it, except for like stuck lobbies, you know. Global cumulative storage capacity now is getting into batteries. Energy storage deployments doubled from 2017 to 18, projected to double again in 2019. Come on, Elon, make some batteries. Lithium iron battery prices have gone down below per kilowatt hour, gone from $1,000 a kilowatt hour down to less around 100, looks like, in this graph. So good tenfold. Tesla has built the world's largest lithium iron battery factory at a wind farm, in South Australia. Then the Florida Power and Light. We're replacing two natural gas-fired power plants. That's even not efficient for them anymore. With solar farms and a new battery system four times larger than the now largest. So they know what they're doing. That's what all the oil companies should be doing. All utilities. And then it goes Los Angeles. Global electric cars on the road. Huge numbers going up into the millions, up to 5 million now in the U.S., and predicted by 2023, there'll be more electric cars. That it will be, you know, the combustion engines going out, and then countries planning a fossil fuel vehicle phase out, and then they give that. But some of them are too late. 2040, England saying 2040, Canada, France, forget that. They should do that. We're not even in this list because of the stupid president that we have and administration. But some of them is too slow. We got to have everything done this decade. General Motors believes all future is all electric. That's a mark. The vice president of global product development And I don't want that. No, I don't want that. He's saying in 2:17, he said, hope they didn't fire him. And then globally, 11 million people now work directly or indirectly in the renewable energy sector. U.S. solar energy jobs have grown 6 times faster than the overall economy in the U.S. last year. Wind turbine service technician is the second fastest growing category, and solar installer is the first growing job in the United States. 5 times as many jobs in solar as in coal mining, but that's not enough at all. That has to be increased. But we will. So can we change? He says, yes. Will we change? Number 3. And then every nation agrees the Paris Agreement to work together to achieve net zero greenhouse gas. UN cannot legally withdraw until the day after the 2020 presidential election. And definitely Green New Deal is going to win the presidency. It doesn't matter which individual, it'll be Green New Deal. It will not be either a crazy Trump or a sold-out Democratic politician who pretends that Green New Deal won't work and we're not going to do it. They won't win. They will not win because people are activated now, everyone. No, it's not a matter of just some kids or something. Everyone is activated. And coal plants have been canceled, tons of them. There's a whole bunch of red dots in America. Coal consumption is down. Northern India, et cetera, skipping. Norway's sovereign wealth fund has divested from oil and gas investments, although it still sells oil and gas to other countries, but itself is 100% renewable. 112 global financial institutions have announced they will stop financing coal-fired power plants, at least, but they should stop financing all of other things. And kids are after them, and they will. Over 190 global companies have made a commitment to go 100% renewable. And we're talking Sony, Visa, Aon, Adobe, Autodesk, Burberry, Citibank, Bloomberg, Tata Motors, Swisscom, Steelcase, Walmart, big companies. So that's happening. Global corporate clean energy purchase agreements have shot up. China and India are both on track to overachieve Paris commitments, but everyone needs to overachieve Paris commitments. And they're showing that young people join those who are using their choices to fight the climate crisis. Use your choices, take action now. Go to 24hoursofreality.org. So that's it. Go to 24hoursofreality.org. That go there and see what your choices could be. That's what I'm saying in this podcast. And speak truth to power.
Thurman Podcast is published by Tibet House US, Menla Retreat, and Dewa Spa under a Creative Commons No Derivatives license. Please feel free to share, like, and repost on your favorite social media platforms. Tashi Nudek, and thanks for tuning in.